Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Putin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Protect Health Corporation is a subsidiary under the Ministry of Health and tasked to galvanize the private healthcare sector's participation in the national COVID-19 immunization program. But how will it have to evolve as the government's approach to the pandemic changes? Joining us on the show today is the CEO of Protect Health, Datuk Dr. Anas Alam Faizli. Datuk Anas, thanks for joining us. We understand that Protect Health is the administrator of several healthcare initiatives under the MOH, not just running the PIC program. We'll come to that shortly. I thought we could begin our conversation tonight with a look at the booster take-up, the booster rollout. Almost 70% of adult Malaysians have been boosted, which is an accomplishment in its own right. But of those who haven't, many are senior citizens. Operationally, what do you see that explains why booster take-up has been much slower compared to the primary doses for this cohort? Because, you know, at face value, boosting should be one of the simplest actions for vaccinated Malaysians. It's just one more shot. So what explains this?
Thank you, Melissa. So as you are aware, we have boosted 70% of our adult population. And out of the 70%, the elderly constitute a higher percentage. And your question with regards to why they are not, so we've vaccinated 98% of adults, or more than that, and 70% have taken their booster dose. So when we started the vaccination program, we received feedback from the public that everybody was wary about the vaccine program. But as we progress last year, we see how in June and July, the number picked up, and towards the end, we managed to achieve 80% in as early as in August and September, whereas the initial target was to have the second fully vaccinated status, 80% of adult by February 2022. But we accelerated the target to end of last year, and then accelerated again to October, and then finally we achieved the target in August. So that was a fantastic achievement. Now, if you note, this achievement with regards to booster percentage is consistent globally, and we can see that in other countries also there is some gap between the percentage of booster and the percentage of second dose. And you can see the number of people rushing for vaccination is also impacted by many factors. Last year in August, you can see the number of hospitalization and the number of fatalities is at high. And you can see the number is high as 300 fatalities daily basis. And I suppose those numbers play a role in affecting people's psyche in taking the booster vaccination dose. Mind you, there are also people that is scared of the needles. So a lot of these things plays into effect. But I would say globally, the 70% number that we achieve is actually pretty good.
Right. So, but there was some concern, I think, emanating from government that the elderly weren't taking it up sufficiently. And when we put this question to a representative from the Malaysian Society of Aging, they said that, in fact, the government had not done what it done with the primary doses, which was going to the care homes. And that was part of the reason why there was a gap, along with because many other reasons for hesitancy, maybe complacency, as you suggest, people may be a little more comfortable now. But are care homes being serviced quite the same way as they were before?
Actually, there are 16 nursing homes and 165 old folks home registered throughout the country. Last year, KKM had gone through all the old folks home and have done the primary dose vaccination. And early this year, towards end of last year and early this year, the NGOs, the healthcare NGOs, has gone to all the elderly homes and has done the booster dose vaccination. From my record, we've done more than 90% booster dose at the care homes. Sharad.
Okay, well, that's encouraging to hear. I'm just wondering, what else can be done? Because, you know, if you think about the challenges that that I guess allow for or that contribute to the slow take up of the booster rollout, what needs to be done to address it? So besides going to the care homes, what else can we do to ensure that older folk who are at a higher risk of developing severe COVID, they are the ones that are getting boosted?
So if you notice, the success of the COVID immunization program since its beginning was a whole of government, whole of society approach. When we started, we invited the general practitioners to come on board. And then we also expanded it to include the private hospitals, the ambulatory care centers, and also the specialist clinic. And then in June last year, we also included the healthcare NGOs to be part of the PICK program. So that's key, meaning that we need to have everybody participating in the program. The only reason we are able to achieve almost all adults vaccinated in this country is because every Malaysians played their role, even yourself included. You were pushing your families and making sure everybody has gotten their vaccination. I'm sure Sharad did the same, and making sure all their family members are vaccinated. Moving forward, we have gone through many evolvement of the vaccination program. So when we started, it was appointment pushing, if you remember. So everybody was screaming, why I didn't get my appointment, et cetera, et cetera. And the vaccine program has been executed in, to me, in an utopian manner. It has equity principle of justice in our vaccination program, meaning that you will get your vaccination no matter of your social standing. We started with, if you remember last year, we started with the elderly, and then frontliner and the elderly, and then we started with those with comorbid, and then we open up, and you will get your appointment either at the government hospital or at a private hospital. So this is something that is actually a dream come true in the healthcare industry, because it's equitable and accessible, and you get your vaccine as per your facing. Now, to answer your question, now we are at a stage where we have evolved into the booking system, where people can book a vaccine through MySejahtera, and they can choose the PPV nearest to their location, and they can also choose the vaccine type as recommended. And for them to book, or they can also walk in at any PPV. So we've come to a stage where you have to wait for your appointment. The vaccine supply is limited, to now a stage where the vaccine is available and you can choose at your convenience where to get the vaccine and when to get the vaccine. And we've also recently introduced the 4 call line, where anyone that is unable to physically go to the PPVs to register, there's a national hotline, there's a WhatsApp contact, there's a website. And also on MySejahtera, you can click an option that you are unable to go to PPVs, and we will provide home vaccination service. So I think we have evolved with what we have last year to a stage where it's very accessible. The vaccine is very accessible, and it's very easy to get. And we are making sure that no one would be left behind by ensuring that all the old folks home, all those that cannot come to the PPVs are being served. And again, through the whole of government, whole of society approach, where everybody plays their role, Melissa.
Right. So, Anas, it sounds like a wonderfully comprehensive, overview of what's happening, and if everything is, goes according to plan, that was is a near utopian or perfect situation, as you suggested earlier. But, you know, there were gaps in the early days, and this had to do with, undocumented workers and maybe people living on the peripheries of the country, people in the interiors. Are there, in your perception, areas where there's still much work to be done in terms of getting these vaccines into people's arms, in a situation where they feel comfortable and they are protected so that in some sense we all are protected?
So what we did last year with the undocumented, MRCS came up with a system on how to document them, at least for the vaccination purpose. I mean, we are not running immigration centers, we are running vaccination centers. So what we did was we get them to come and to get the vaccination. And we also get the local district officers to find where they are and go to them. And also we are aware that towards in September, October last year, when we had the CanSino one dose vaccine, we also use this for the migrant workers where we are worried that they might only come one time. So we allocate the single dose vaccine to ensure that we can go out to them. The same strategy is used in Sabah when we go into the rural areas, not rural, the very interior areas. We use the CanSino because we know that in order to come for the second time would be difficult. So that was the strategy implemented last year. And the same strategy is continuously being done, where we work closely with the home NGOs, the healthcare NGOs, where they work with community leaders to bring the vaccine direct to the population. And we've also done a lot of outreach for the booster program. So last year, the program, we have the PPV industry, if you recall, where we allow employer to arrange vaccination at their offices, and they work together with the ministries, and we will set up, they will set up everything, and we will come and give the vaccination. But the vaccine administration is paid by the employer. And then we have outreach programs and many other programs. So now what we did was all those are combined into one comprehensive outreach program where every provider or every of our provider can apply to Protect Health to do outreach program to industry and to do outreach program to the communities. And the healthcare NGOs are also doing home-to-home vaccination. Last year, we did more than 8,000 home-to-home, house-to-house vaccination. And as of April, they have already gone back to those home and given booster dose to the home recipient, the vaccinees. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anas, we're going to take a quick break, but let's come back and continue this conversation. Still quite a lot to cover in our chat. We will be back with more on Consider This in just a couple of minutes. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutin. Let's continue our conversation with Dato' Anas Alam Faizli, CEO of Protect Health, which is a not-for-profit subsidiary under the Ministry of Health. Anas, if I'm not mistaken, so Protect Health's role essentially in the PIC program was to be the implementer or the communicator between the private healthcare sector to participate in the PIC program. As the government transitions the country into this endemic phase, into living with COVID, how do you see that changing, your role and the role of private healthcare practitioners changing as perhaps the vaccination and boosters are being incorporated into the public healthcare system? might your role and the private sector's role change?
We were appointed as the implementer for private medical practitioner early March last year. Having said that, we are doing what you say, enrolling the private sector. And then we have to check if they have the, they are really private practitioners. And then we do the training for them with all the various type of vaccines. And we have to make sure on the cold box arrangement is well understood. And as you can see throughout the implementation of PIC, the guidelines is always updated. So every month or so, there's new guideline which has to be communicated to the provider. Even as we speak now, you might have heard the press release yesterday by YBKJ on the second booster dose for the elderly. So all these have to be communicated to the provider. Now, the difference is when we were in the chasing the vaccination program, we had to do in big volume. So last year, when we were opening the big PPVs, you can remember in July when we did as high as 580,000 doses a day. So those numbers are now is smaller, but somebody still have to do the vaccination. So we are moving from focusing on these big PPVs to pushing it to the smaller on-site PPVs, which means the private clinics. So the private clinics must be maintained in order to pick up the numbers. So at the moment, our booster dose capacity is 60,000 a day, and these are contributed by all the small clinics nationwide and also hospitals. So having said that, the role still continue to ensure the providers are still there to do the vaccination program.
So, Anas, you know, there are critics who say that in many ways the Malaysian government's approach has been episodic, right? So you had the first phase and we didn't have vaccines, and now the focus is entirely on vaccines. But one of the things that often missing is the testing, right? Testing has been a real weakness in the government response. And there are experts who are saying that, you know, with testing and the development of new therapeutic drugs, which if given early enough, might actually be the solution in the long term. So is there any thought being given to things other than vaccinations from your perspective that could help us deal with the pandemic, especially as new therapeutic drugs, you know, come out of pharmaceutical companies?
I think the challenge with the pandemic is that we learn as we go along. When we got our first vaccine supply last year, many people are still worried on taking the vaccine, but luckily we are able to convince the public together. We worked together and everybody played their role, and we managed to get the population to take the vaccine. And as we move along throughout the year, you can see how people are now more health conscious. And now we are talking about better ventilation, and we are talking about trying to make sure not to move beyond the planetary health because we are worried new pandemics will come about. So those are in the reign of planetary boundaries, especially like global warming, climate change. These are all a potential creator of new pandemics. And on top of all this, we have to also move towards inculcating better health-seeking behavior. At Protect Health, we are also the administrator for PECA B40, where it provides free health screening for the B40 population. The objective is to ensure that everyone understands their health condition, and hopefully they are able to make modifications towards their health lifestyle and monetary diet modification. Because during the pandemic, you realize that majority of those affected severely are those with NCDs, the non-communicable disease. If they have hypertension, if they have diabetic, this group of people are the most severely affected by COVID-19 pandemic. So moving forward, I think it is very important that we work together as a country alongside with the Ministry of Health to make sure that we can change the health-seeking behavior attitude, that we make sure that everyone knows their health condition. We have to increase health literacy so that everybody understand how they can do to improve their health as a whole. And we know for a fact that in Malaysia, we have high diabetic number, we have high hypertension number, we have 3 out of 10 with mental health issues. So all this have to be addressed so that we can, as a country, become a healthier nation. And when the next pandemic comes, hopefully, before we have the vaccine for that whatever pandemic, at least we are healthier people and we are able to cope with it better.
Anas, do you think the health literacy and health-seeking behavior improved because of the pandemic? Because, as you know, we were very conscious of what was happening around us, of the effects of the pandemic, the effects of the disease. Do you think that might have helped boost, in a way, health literacy? There were a lot of WhatsApp epidemiologists during this pandemic. So do you think that perhaps that might have a cascading effect?
There is effect, but I'm just worried that the effect is not long-lasting. It's reactive rather than active. It's more to that when you read the news, there's a lot of people infected with COVID and there's a lot of people in ICU. So everybody become conscious. But how do we make sure this health-seeking behavior, this health literacy stays longer and become a culture in all Malaysians? And I hope we can together, not just Ministry of Health, it has to go beyond Ministry of Health. It has to be everybody. Example, the education must also play its role. I remember in primary school where I got intoxicated with air syrup, air sasi, So I really hope we don't start like that at school. So if that are things we can change, I would change that. And another example is how we go about understanding health itself. How many people are aware about their sugar level, their hypertension, how to manage blood pressure? So these are not basic information. If this become normal conversation and people are seeking early treatment and prevention, so I'm sure we can become a healthier nation.
Anas, many years ago you authored a book, Rich Malaysia, Poor Malaysians, I believe the correct title. And you really tried to get Malaysians to talk about wage suppression, many of these issues that are very important and still plague us today. How successful? I mean, you're talking about social change, changing mindset. Your experience is trying to lead the conversation on that. When you think about what is necessary now for a conversation on health, what is it that stops Malaysians from taking up these important ideas and actually implementing them? Because they seem to have a problem. We talk maybe, and then we leave it, right? Hangat, hangat, tai ayam kind of situation.
I think now we have a very strong health minister that is very passionate about health topics. He also mentioned that example on the healthy food. So healthy food is not just about telling everyone to get healthy food. I mean, healthy food is expensive. So we have to complete the whole cycle. How do we make healthy food accessible and cheap for everybody to get their healthy food? And hopefully if we can make healthy food tastier, is also an added bonus. So I think I'm thank you, Sharad, for saying that, but I have always believed that the biggest investment for any country is in its education and its healthcare system. It's still under invest, and we have to spend much more for education and for healthcare. And if we do that, we will end up with a more productive nation, more productive Malaysians. And come what may, we will be able to face it better as a country.
Right. We have just a minute left, Anas, and very quickly, I just want to get you to wrap up, particularly because you are looking at the, I think the Pick Kids program is set to wrap up. We are still trying to get people to go and get their booster doses. A quick last takeaway message for our viewers tonight who possibly may not yet have taken their booster dose or gotten their kids vaccinated.
So last but not least, I just have to remind everyone that with the coming Hari Raya, people are expected to get together and attend gatherings either indoor or outdoors. And with these situations occurring over a prolonged period where people are in very close proximity and there are high possibilities in the transmission of the COVID-19, and especially for the elderly, those with comorbids, please take care of yourself. Get boosted, always promote vaccine, and make sure that you try to live a healthier life. And because by that is the ultimate protection, by living healthily, then we can survive this pandemic together.
All right. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Dato' Anas Alam Faizli, CEO of Protect Health. And that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.